Hip is my guest. And I gotta tell you, it's crazy. My girlfriend's coming in this weekend, and you know, she lives back east, and I have to get my apartment clean. And it's weird because I'm not messy, and my apartment's big. I mean, I have a spare bedroom I don't use, and the downstairs bathroom I don't use. But I call these cleaning people, and I was going to call them. It's been like a month and a half, 2 months since she came out, so I always go back there. I was going to call them, and then I was sitting there going, wait a second, I'm going back east, so I'm going to call them once 3 weeks ago, and I'll call them again. I don't want to spend the money. So basically, the guy, it's so funny, I'm having a problem, but the cleaning, they're so funny because I pay them. And the guy came in the first time, and he's sitting there, and he says to me, do you have paper towels? And I go, yes. And he's like, can I use them? I'm like, no. I'm like, I'm paying you. And the guy actually had the balls to ask me. He said, oh, how about plastic bags? I go, they're right down there. And he went to grab for them. I said, no, they're my freaking bags. I said, pay me. I'm paying you to do the work. So they're coming out to clean, which is good because I'm not dirty, but I have a lot of crumbs. I've been cooking a lot, and I just don't want to clean crumbs because it's messy. But anyway, that's enough about this. We have a great show today. We have a very, very funny guest. And I'm not going to say funny female because I don't believe in, I don't believe in tagging that, okay? I hate when people sit there and they say, oh, yeah, so, you know, this female comic, because I think it just screws up comedy. And it's like, I swear, I wish I was a half female, half African-American, half Asian, half Mexican, and gay, because I would work every night, okay? But there's all these specialized nights. But we have a very funny lady. Now, I can call her a funny lady. Jen Murphy, thank you for coming on, Jen.
Thank you so much. You can call me funny lady. That's awesome.
I could say, you're a female comic. And I mean, as I said, you're a comic, first of all. But does it bother you a little bit that people sometimes, I mean, they generalize, and I'm sure does it bother you as a comic that people sit there and treat you differently sometimes?
I mean, not so much. The only thing, I get a little bit annoyed when they do it in an intro. Like the host says, are you guys ready for a female? Like they make it sound like a big deal.
Well, I always love it. It's because it's always an idiot host. I always love the host.
Annoying.
And you always learn this. And you can always tell. Me and Jen were talking about the ins and outs of comedy before we got on air. But you can always tell a new comic. And these are always the people who have, you know, thousands of hours of material, you know, and you can tell though when they go up on stage, they take the mic. Well, you just keep the mic in the stand pretty much, don't you?
Yeah, at least for the first part. Yeah.
They take the mics out of the stand and they leave the stand in front of them.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like a distraction. You're going, you can do 30 minutes and you can't even do it. Or when they say, let's bring up, you guys ready for your first act? No, you're an act. That's what they don't get. You're opening. MC, you ever notice that?
It's like, I never understand why they say, because they are a comic.
It's like they're making fun of themselves.
Yeah, so, I always found that bizarre too.
So now how long have you been doing comedy?
7 years.
Okay, now you grew up, you grew up in California.
I did. I grew up in Arcadia right by Pasadena, where the racetrack is.
Okay, now when you were younger, I always talk to people about this. What did you like comedy when you were a kid, or was there certain acts? I mean, like, you know, I'll talk, like, I like Woody Allen, and I have certain acts who come on and say, oh, I saw Laurel and Hardy, because we're all old, these people on the show. But no, there's people, it's like one comic's like, oh, I used to like Conan. I go, oh, he's like the newer Conan.
I'm like,
you're damn young. But did you watch comedy as a kid, or how did you know you wanted to do comedy?
My first experiences of comedy were Eddie Murphy's Delirious. I used to hide upstairs, my brother and I, and listen to it because we weren't allowed to listen to it.
Right, well, because how old were you?
So we'd put the cassette tape in and put headphones.
Were you a little kid?
God, I don't know, maybe like 9 or 10?
Yeah, so I mean, that was pretty heavy for a 9 or 10-year-old.
Yeah, I'm sure I didn't understand half of it.
Isn't that funny? It's like, I did that once, and me and my friend used to drive up to the record store on our bikes, okay? And it was like a ride. It was like, back then you have to wear a helmet. You didn't have to worry about getting, you know, stopped and molested. I mean, it's like, we just would ride, and we wouldn't tell our parents where we're going. I remember I bought a Lenny Bruce album, and my mom and dad had no idea who he was, I don't think, because there's no way in hell they're going to let like a 7-year-old listen to Lenny Bruce.
Yeah.
So you're listening to Eddie Murphy. Now, did you say, wow, that's funny, or how did, I mean, what did you think when you heard it?
No, I don't think it necessarily made me want to be a comedian. I loved performing from the time I was like 2.
Now, did you do like theater, or did you play any instruments?
I didn't play instruments.
See, I could see you as a clarinet player. I could see you playing the clarinet.
Really? I wanted to play the drums when I was young because I loved like heavy metal, like Rat and Motley Crue,
okay.
Twisted Sister. But just from the time I was 2, like, I just tried all different performing. I took ballet, gymnastics. I started doing plays. I always wanted to sing.
Okay, no.
Like, I always was just searching for whatever I was good at.
No, were you good at gymnastics?
I was was okay. I was never really good at anything until I started comedy.
That's weird. Like the gymnastics, and because you're petite. I mean, you're a small girl. I mean, you're not. I mean, you're thin. I mean, I'm sure you were a very like thin kid. I mean, and usually a lot of times thin girls go into gymnastics or ballet because, I mean, you don't see a lot of fat girls.
Yeah.
You don't see fat girls in the balance
beam.
It's
hard to stay on the balance beam.
When it tips up on one side, it's a seesaw effect. But so, okay, so you were going through. Now, did you go to college?
I went to a dramatic arts college, American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
And that's in L.A.?
In Pasadena.
Okay, so you got out of high school and then you said, okay, I want to get into acting?
Yeah, I went to that directly after. But I was only there for like a year and a half, and then I moved to New York.
Okay, now did you do plays in college?
I did.
I'm sorry, in high school?
In high school, I auditioned for them, but they only did musicals, and I was really bad at singing, so I would kind of just be like an extra in the background lip syncing.
Okay. See, that would suck, though. It's like, see, I have no musical talent. Like, my brother is an amazing drummer. My sister played the French horn and the cello. Needless to say, my sister was heavy. Why else would you play that? But I played the trombone, and I played in sixth grade, and I was supposed to do a duet with this girl, and I forgot all about it. She sent me a message on Facebook. Remember that duet? And I got mono in sixth grade, and I missed it.
That's so funny. It sucks when you like desperately want to be good at something and you're not. Like, I wanted to be a musical theater person. I don't know what you call them, performers.
Yeah, what are
they
called?
Like, for like 6 years, even though my voice was bad, I kept taking singing lessons and auditioning for stuff.
No, that's what cracks me up. Like, singing lessons. I mean, it's like, if your voice sucks, they can't change it. I mean, I know, I would love to sing good. My voice sucks. I was thinking, maybe I should take singing lessons.
I'm very stubborn, though. I think, like, I have this mentality where I'm like, if I really want something, I have to get it.
Right. But that's good, especially in the business we're in.
It's not always good, because sometimes I do that with men also, where I'm like, if I like you, you have to like me, but they don't.
Does that cause you a problem?
Yeah, because I'll keep believing it too long.
What, that they like you, or?
No, just that I, just like you spend too much time putting energy into someone.
Well, you know what's weird? You ever go through like a breakup, and it was like, and I went through this when I got divorced, and I mean, my marriage sucked. I was like walking on eggshells, and then when they leave, you're like, I want to get them back, and you go, what the hell are you doing? Your life sucked. I remember my first Christmas alone, I'm like, oh my God, and it's like, your life sucked. You were miserable. You're happy now, you know?
Yeah.
And do you ever go through that?
Because your brain clouds it. You get too focused on what you think you want, and then sometimes you have those moments of reality where you're like I've done that, where I'm like, wait, what do I even like about this person?
Right.
You know, like sometimes it just becomes you wanting so badly to get what you think you want that you forget, like, do I really want that?
Or I think sometimes it's you're just so used to it. It's like you're used to that person be around. Because I mean, being alone is scary. I mean, when I got divorced, I was like, oh my God, I didn't date anyone for a year and a half. Because I was married for 7 years and I was with it for five. But it was like, because why? I was, and this, guys don't say this, but I was terrified to be naked with another woman because I was with the same woman. I never cheated on her. I was with the same woman for 12 years. And then you sit there and you go out and it's like, what
I
do?
I don't know
do?
How you, people go through divorce.
It's I was easy. I mean,
sounds painful. Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad
she
to hear
said,
that.
She goes, I'm holding you back. I need to leave. And she went back and then she called me and she goes, can I come back? I said, no, I don't miss you. Boom, case done. And it was, and she
well,
went
that's
back
good to
east.
Hear. It sounds so painful.
Well, I heard what's really painful is when they have kids.
Yeah.
Now, are your parents married still?
No, but they didn't get divorced till I was 22 and my brother was 24. So at
isn't
least...
that weird? Like my friend's parents did that too. When his kids were like, but when this was my friend Mike, when he was like 39, you know, it's like, and it's like, all of a sudden, it's like,
so
isn't
bizarre.
That weird? It's like you're 60 and now, and it's funny. It's just weird. Now, you've never been married, right?
No, I haven't.
Now, what's the longest relationship you've been in?
Gosh, like a year and a half.
Oh, that's fine. No, there's nothing wrong with that. That's actually better. Because if you meet someone, it's like if you meet someone who has an ex-girlfriend or ex-boyfriend, they've been around forever, they've been together for years, that's all they talk about. Oh, my ex-girlfriend. You know, and it's like, I mean, you probably
yeah,
go through that with
I
guys.
I got none of that.
So now you were living in L.A., you were going to acting school, you were, because you sucked at singing. Right. So you, and all of a sudden you said, when you were doing acting, when you were in that acting school, did you get the comedy bug? Did you want to know you wanted to do comedy, or did you start when you got to New York?
No, well, my teachers would always push me towards comedy, but I was like, really?
They said, please don't say.
I was a really, no, this is the thing. I think I was a really depressed person at the time. And so I think I thought that I'd be great at drama.
Okay.
But really they kept going like, no, you need to do. anytime I tried to be dramatic, it would come out funny, I guess. They always pushed me towards drama, towards a comedy.
So you were in, did you start doing comedy then?
But I didn't really start until I was in New York.
Okay, so what made you go to New York? I mean, what, did you sit there and go, I want to do comedy or I want to act? Or you just said, I want to get out of L.A.?
I wanted to act and be out of L.A. Okay. And I really at that time was so focused on doing live theater rather than like movies or television that I figured New York. But also something new because I grew up here.
Now, was it a... Did you drive cross country? Did you fly out?
No, I should have though. When I look back now, I was like, "Ah, oh, why didn't I do that?"
So you just flew in. Did you know people there?
No, I didn't know anyone.
Did you have a place lined up or anything?
Well, I called schools out there and pretended I was going to school, and I got hooked up into this like all women's hostel.
Okay, how was that? I performed it. It was weird because there's comedy. People, if you don't know, this is how weird LA is. There's comedy shows in hostels. Then you go on stage and none of them speak English. So you're sitting there doing your act. Like one guy goes, oh, Coop, just so you know, Miguel Fierro.
Yes.
He used to, I don't know if he still books it.
He does.
The Hollywood Hostel. Yes. And he's like, they might not get your, because I do a like pop culture reference to different rent. He goes, they might not get that. And I'm like, well, thanks for telling me now. Thanks for telling me when I'm about to go up on stage. And they don't understand you.
Well, it's frustrating because, you do a joke, and if they don't laugh, it's like, do they not think I'm funny or do they not understand me?
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like, I have two of my good friends are from Norway. And one's been here for like 4 or 5, maybe longer now, maybe 7 years. And the other's been here for a long time. But even now, like we were watching 2 and a Half Men, and they made some comment, and my buddy, and I'm laughing, he goes, what's so funny about that? And I had to explain what fellatio was.
Oh,
because
really?
He's like, because they don't, it's not, the, it's different slang.
It's a big word.
Yeah, it's different slang. But that's what it sucks. So you go to New York, and now you're living in this hostel. With a bunch of women.
Yes.
Now, were they women of all ages, or were they younger, older, or what, you know?
There's a lot of younger ones, because I moved there in the summer, and a lot of really young girls would come to New York for the summer to do ballet or dance, you know, kind of do a summer program in theater there. So a lot of young, but it was a mixture. There were some older, too.
Now, what technically is a hostel? Is it like, do you have bunk beds, or do you have your own room?
No, it's more, this was a little bit of a nicer one, I would think, that it's more of... I had my own room, but it was like smaller than it was tiny.
Okay, but you had a closet and everything. Like you could put your clothes.
You basically had like a tiny little twin bed and a sink.
That's it.
Was it? And then you share a bathroom down the hall. They're very small rooms, and then there's like a cafeteria downstairs.
It's like a dorm. It's like a college dorm.
Yeah, college dorms.
Now, was it in Manhattan?
Yes.
What part of Manhattan?
34th and 9th on the west side.
Okay. Now, did you like that area?
Yeah, it was great.
So you're in Manhattan and you're there to do theater. Now, did you get an agent or did you get auditions or what?
I joined a theater company and just worked a lot, just in the, you know, like off Broadway kind of.
But you were acting, so you're probably happy.
Yeah, I was happy because I was in a theater company and I was doing it. And then I slowly got more involved in comedy, doing like I got into Second City.
Because you went more of the improv route first, because you go from stage, because you're already acting on stage, so I'm sure it's a very quick jump. It's like when I had a sketch comedy troupe after I got out of comedy. And it was very easy because it was just a different. I mean, you know, now as a stand-up comic, sometimes it's freaking scary out there when you're eating it, you know. And you know, you look at your clock, and all of a sudden, your 10 minutes is only 2 minutes. You're like, I got on stage at 12:14. It's 12:16. Holy crap! And but with
paying attention to time on stage is the worst feeling.
Do you do it?
No, because the only time you do it is when you're not doing well.
Right.
You know, if you're doing well, you're just flowing. You don't even think about it. But when I'm looking up. When I'm having a bad set and I'm looking up like, when are they going to put the light on?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst feeling. I hate that.
It's so funny. It's like that. I'm sure comics have that dream. Like, it's like whenever, did you ever wait tables?
Oh, God, for like 12 years.
Okay, well, it's like the old dream where waiters have. It's like where the table, I even still get them. And I haven't waited tables for like 10 years.
It never leaves you.
And yeah, it's like if you never waited tables, you sit there and you have a dream. Well, you tell them. I mean,
why do you have those server? I know, my God, it would happen and all the time.
Because you're sitting there, and people throwing you. You're sitting there, and you're in your section, and tables just keep coming in, and then everyone's just awful. They're like, "I need this." And then you go, and there's another table, and you go to the host, and they're ignoring you, and it's weird because it's like, who gives a crap? It's waiting tables, but it's just you wake up and you're just overwhelmed.
I don't know what it is about the intensity of being a server. I never knew if other people had this or if I just cared way too much about getting people their iced tea on time. But
see, I care, but a lot of people don't give a crap.
I would get a lot of anxiety if I thought I was doing a bad job as a waiter.
But there's nothing wrong with that, because that means it comes across and it probably comes across when you're doing comedy. No, it comes across as a good work ethic. I was the same way. I was always there late. And if I got a complaint from a guest, I'm like, what the hell? And
yeah.
I'm always like that. Not anti-authority, because I like authority, but I have integrity. I have integrity. And to be honest, I mean, when I went into management in restaurants, I did marketing. I wasn't a floor manager. And floor managers, basically, it's like you can give a monkey a pleated pants and a denim shirt, and he can be a floor manager, because they all hide in the back, and they don't do crap. Okay, so, but then these guys be talking to me, which I have a degree in management. Well, you know, this table, and it's like, shut up. You know, it's like, but I gave a shit, and then I'd be pissed. I'd be like, who do they to talk to me like that? You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know nothing. I said, you know nothing. I'll give you management theories. You won't even know what they are. You made good drinks and kissed the GM's ass.
The worst experience I had was this restaurant in New York where, talk about having integrity. I had integrity as a server. Like, I cared about my customers.
Well, you should.
This was a family-style restaurant. They served huge platters.
Was it Dominic's?
No, it's called Tony's DiNapoli.
Okay. Wait, where's
46th
that?
Between Broadway and 6th Avenue.
Is it right across from a theater? There's a theater right across.
Yeah.
I was in New York when my brother's wife passed away the night before. It was like 2 years ago. And we went to this Italian homestyle place. Now, he lives on 55th and 6th. But we took a cab, and it was right across from this theater. Is it three levels or two levels?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think I ate there like 2 years ago. So what happened? I mean,
So I would always get in trouble because they push you. It's all about selling. That
right.
was their whole thing. Sell, sell, sell. So they'd be like, if a table of two people come in, serve them, convince them to each get a platter. And it's like, are you kidding me? That's enough for like 10 people.
Right.
And I would tell people, you don't need all that much food. I would always tell people, you don't need that much food.
Yeah.
And I would constantly get in trouble. And I'm just like, no, I'm not over. You know, then people go to the theater. They're not taking to-go bags.
And then people give
you
a crappy tip.
You just go and dump all this. I just hated dumping it all in the trash.
Yeah, and I hated it too. It's like, I hate when they'd be like, okay, here's the things of service. Okay, now, you know, remember, push the appetizer. Well, I know if I go out, okay, and I go out to eat a lot, not as much now, it's my heart thing, but like, especially when my girlfriend comes out, we go to eat, okay? And she was a server. She was a cocktail waitress years ago, and then she was a server. And so we've been in a business, so
yeah.
We understand sometimes you're overwhelmed, but sometimes there's shitty service, and sometimes. But I get irritated if someone comes up and they're like, okay, well, today's special, would you like to try our calamari? It's crispy. I'm like, get the hell away from me. I mean, you probably weren't that. Were you that kind of server?
No, I mean, we had to say the specials or whatever, but like, no.
Did you hate that? Now, when you go out there, don't you? I mean, it's like, I had a waiter one night, and we were going to give him, like, it was like our bill was, it was me and a few friends, and our bill was like $100. We're gonna give him 20. We're gonna give him $25 because it was busy.
Yeah.
And I tipped good. But then I said something, and he gave a fake laugh before we paid him. He went, and I said, take $5 or $10.
No way, so, just for the laugh?
Yeah,
wow, you're
fake.
Brutal.
No, it wasn't like a laugh. It's like I said something totally stupid. Now, I thought it was funny, it'd be different. But it was so wrong. He goes, and hopefully it wasn't his real laugh. He still got 20%, but he would have got 25%.
That's hilarious.
So what is like some of the? Did you ever deal with like pricks when you're because New York. Think about New York is people tip well usually, right?
Yeah, I mean, the places I worked in New York were all around Times Square area mostly, so it goes back and forth because you also get a lot of foreigners who don't know to tip. But it never upset me.
Right.
It doesn't upset me if people don't know.
Right.
But or if in their country they don't. Usually coming here they should know, but sometimes they only leave like $2 or $3.
Yeah, I worked at Planet Hollywood in Beverly Hills, and we had tip cards on the table in 6 different languages, and they still wouldn't tip. And you're like, oh God. So okay, so you're
That's
in New York. You're waiting tables in New York. You're doing theater. Okay, so you're hustling and bustling. Now, you slowly went into you forayed into improv, Second City.
Yeah, I just did it to for acting purposes, really, because I figure. Improv makes you a better actor.
Okay. So then what made you jump into stand-up from there? Did you enjoy getting laughs or what was...
No, I have to say, I wish I had a story that I loved doing stand-up since I was a child, but really my acting teacher just pushed me to do it.
In New York?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I wish I had a better story.
Well, no, it's fine. I mean, you know how I got into comedy? People would say I was funny and I was, you know, but I wasn't like class clown. And I talked about, I want to do stand-up comedy. And I didn't know how I did it. My mom saw a a thing in the Philadelphia Learning Annex. So I took a class at the Learning Annex. And it didn't teach me to be funny, but it made me go, okay, here's what you do. You go to a comedy club. I didn't know where comedy clubs were. I grew up in, you know, I mean, I was right near Philadelphia, but the only time I saw a comic was a guy, Chip Franklin, who booked me years later in the D.C. area. And he was a musical act then. And I saw him at my college. I said, this is funny. But I didn't know. And it's like, there's a lot of people that don't have stories like that. I mean, love comedy, but my mom gave me an article. So your teacher tells you, say, did you start writing an act, or did you know anything about writing an act?
No, I loved stand-up before I did. I used to go every week and watch, because I had some friends that did it. Like, I just was an extremely shy person. That's why I started taking improv, too, because I was almost too shy to act. Sometimes I'd be on stage, and I would, like, freeze up.
Okay, that's fine, though, but no, it's...
So I just never thought I could do it because I'm so shy. But then, yeah, my teacher was best friends with Colin Quinn.
Okay.
And said...
Who's your teacher?
His name's Harry O'Reilly.
Okay.
He's owned his own studio out there. He set up a class where Colin was going to come in for like 6 weeks and do a stand-up, you know, workshop.
Okay.
So he was like, you have to do this.
Colin Quinn's an amazing comic.
And anytime someone dares me, I have to do it.
Okay, so like, it's the old stubbornness.
Shoot.
Like, if I don't do it. So they said he has to do it. So
I did it. Oh, there was only like five of us in the class, and we spent 6 weeks. So I just wrote, after the first class, I had to write 3 minutes and do it in front of Colin Quinn in the class.
In front of, like, your second. Okay, but that's great, though, because it makes you do it.
It's terrifying, because that's your first time doing stand-up.
Right.
And you're in a classroom.
Yeah, you know, did you have a mic or no?
No, you're just standing.
Oh, that's funny.
But you know what? The other five people in the class, it was their first time also, so it really made it like an amazing experience.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's all of you are together for your first
time. We're going to take a quick break.
Time.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Tell people how they can get to follow you, your website, tell them all that good stuff.
My website is Jen Murphy Comedy, and it's Jen with one N, JenMurphy. comedy.com, and it's the same thing on Twitter at Jen Murphy.
And follow her. She's got a cool website. People follow me at Cooper Talk on Twitter. Also follow, you can hear a bunch of old episodes on www. You have to print that now. You can't just put the name in because my buddy's fixing that. www.coopertalk.net. Also, follow me on Twitter because every Thursday I'm on the Big Daddy Graham Show. It's different times. You know, it's 2 a.m. back there. I usually go in the first segment. That's WIP 94 Philadelphia. And also, I have a new blog. It's just my random thoughts. It's called cooperthoughts.blogspot.com. So check that out. You have any shows coming up?
I do. I will be at the Irvine Improv. Oh, that doesn't matter. I'm headlining John Lovett's Club on September 20th at 8 p.m.
Go
if anyone would
her.
Like to come.
Yeah, go see her. I would come out that night, but I'll be in back east. And I'll be that weekend. I'll be at Comedy Works at Georgine's in Bristol, Pennsylvania. We're going to play a quick commercial. We'll be back with Jen Murphy. Hopefully my commercial works. Whenever I do this thing, it doesn't start. Let's see if it works today. See that? It never works. Hold on. I hate this. We may go without a commercial.
I guess the worst part of all this is that the fools who run this show broadcast this crap all over the world. Cooper Talk. Cooper Talk.
Would you like to find out how you can easily own gold and silver bullion? With oil prices and food costs skyrocketing, there's one sure way to hedge against inflation: owning precious metals. And we can show you how. Operators are standing by with your investor's kit on buying precious metals. Call 1-877-722-7032 to learn the secrets of protecting your net worth. Call now to learn how to hedge yourself with precious metals. We'll show you how to finance and own large amounts of precious metals with small amounts of money. This is not options or futures. We'll show you how to collateralize hundreds of thousands of dollars in precious metals with as little as a 25% investment. For an investor's kit with charts and graphs on the latest precious metals trends and opportunities, call 877-722-7032. That's 877-722-7032. To find out how you can own gold and silver and profit from the wild swings in today's economy. As with all speculative investments, purchasing precious metals involves a risk of loss and should be carefully evaluated prior to investing.
With supershopper.org, you can post your ad online in just 60 seconds. That's fast. That means that old junk sitting in your garage can be online in less time than it takes for you to stub your toe while looking for the light switch. List your electronics, furniture, automotive, garage sales, and more. If you can legally buy it and sell it, it's on. Supershopper.org. Job postings just $25. Everything else, free. That means you can post your resume, get a job, find an apartment, furnish it, sell your car, buy an SUV, adopt a pet, find a house, get a mortgage, find a handyman, sell the house, buy a beach house, buy a surfboard. Supershopper.org. Now you get it.
Looking for great deals on apparel? Visit OnlineSalesMart.com. Currently, we have authentic Armani designer sunglasses at $100 or more off original price. Novelty neckties of all types for under $10. Necktie sets at discounted prices. And high-quality and genuine leather dress shoes, wallets, handbags, briefcases, and more for less. Visit www.OnlineSalesMart.com. All major credit cards are accepted and all orders are shipped on the double. Once again, that's OnlineSalesMart.com.
Remember abundance. At Shakey's Pizza, don't cut back. Cut loose with our all-you-can-eat bunch of lunch. Now just $6.99. Less belt tightening. More belt loosening. Shakey's all-you-can-eat bunch of lunch. Now just $6.99.
Indy100.com.
It's my barbershop quartet. They're actually back here. Jem was going to sing with them. They said, no, we heard you have no voice. So they wouldn't let her. Anyway, welcome back to Cooper Talk. I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guest. And today I'm with the very, very funny Jen Murphy. Now, we were talking about how, you know, Jen ended up in New York, just going to theater, just getting out. Now, okay, growing up, it's such a difference. I mean, it must have been weird for you, because did you ever feel the weathers? I mean, did you ever feel like winter? Did you know what winter was?
No, not until I was in New York.
I know, isn't it weird? Because like, and it's so funny because, I mean, you grew up out here. And I'm going to tell you this. And I live in Burbank. Where do you live in Hollywood?
Studio City.
Okay, so yeah. We're in the valley.
Yeah.
And people say it gets humid in the valley. No. When you get back, I'm like, humidity. And but you know, I mean, you must have like been. It must have been like total cultural shock, not cultural shock, but weather shock. Because you grew up in California, so and California is just always nice. I mean, it's like you. I mean, you probably never wore a winter jacket.
No,
I wear them now because I'm used to. Because I got desensitized. But so when you moved out, well, when did you move out? What month?
In June.
So you were just ready.
Nobody. There's never humidity in the valley.
Yeah,
humidity is in New York when you step out of the shower and you immediately start sweating.
Isn't that,
again.
Yeah, people don't understand that.
And you can't blow dry your hair.
Because it's a bad thing for me. I can't blow dry my hair. No, so yeah, I mean that must have been different. Now you move. At least you moved into the city. Were you used? Did it take a while for you to get used to it? And also, just for because New York's all it goes 24 hours. Now, was that weird for you, or
no? I think because I was so young, I loved it. It was great, you know.
Okay.
The biggest thing to get used to was I wasn't expecting the culture shock of feeling so much like a minority.
Because it's weird as though back there there's I don't know how it is now, but like Philadelphia was the same way. There's areas. It's like, you know, in Philadelphia, Fishtown is Polish, not anymore, but there's a lot of different cultures. I mean, and you go into
there's
the
so
neighborhood.
So many different.
I mean, like the Italian neighborhood. It is like South Philly is the people sit. I don't know if they did this in New York, but in the Italian neighborhoods, they mark their parking spots by their trash cans.
Yeah.
And you know not to park there, else you get your ass kicked.
Yeah.
So what was the culture around you where you live? What was the ethnicity?
Well, when I first moved in on 34th and 9th, there was predominantly black in that, just in those couple blocks.
Okay.
But even just walking down the street, it was just so different. And I thought of everyone as black, but I mean from all different countries, I'm sure, just darker skin.
Right.
But also just all the different type of maybe like Eastern. I don't know. It's just so many different. I'm probably very ignorant also, but I almost feel like I would meet people from countries I'd never heard of.
But no, that's fine. But that's in New York, though, because they think it's like, well, where are they going to go? They're going to go to New York. It's like weird when you hear places like Dearborn, Michigan has the biggest Arab population.
Yeah, who would think that?
Yeah, exactly. It's like I have my friends like.
And why?
Yeah, exactly. People like there's some. Let's say there's a Hispanic population in Minnesota. What makes you go to Minnesota? You're coming from basically a country where you're used to warm weather. You can go and freeze your ass off? I mean, it's weird.
It's very interesting. It was such a great learning experience, though, because then I moved to Astoria, Queens, which is predominantly Greek. But also just working in restaurants, you work with people from different countries. Like, I became best friends with a guy from Albania.
Okay.
From Kosovo. And it was, like, at the time that the war was going on with Serbia. So, I mean, you just expand, I don't know, just eating their food and just.
Oh, yeah. It's,
I felt like it was a really good learning experience.
Oh, yeah. It makes you grow as a person, too. And you see different, not different traditions and stuff like that, and how they really stick to their tradition. But then they also, it's like my mom is right off, her parents are right off the boat from Austria and Yugoslavia. And But my mom never spoke those languages. It was very weird. It's just different back then. But it's just New York is like that. And the East Coast cities are like that because people came years ago. It's not like in LA, you know, it's like, I mean, it's like years ago. These people, they, you know, and they, it's amazing.
And those are very loyal people.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, I think it's just there's a work ethic. It's a certain thing. It's like my girlfriend asked me, she said, because we first time when she came out to visit me the first time. Now, she had been to L.A. because she was a private stewardess, attendant for it. When they go from Teterboro to Van Nuys, and they fly huge people. So she'd be there, but she didn't really know the area. She didn't see the area. But when I picked her up, we went to Malibu for lunch. And then the 101, the ramp, had traffic. She's like, oh, my God. It's just like everywhere. And I told her, she goes, how do people get to work? And I said, out here, people are late. She goes, well, what do they do?
Like, in a parking lot.
Yeah, no one cares. Back east, they don't give a crap. It could be 8 feet of snow. If you're late, you're fired.
Oh.
I think the work ethic, I think, is just different back east.
Maybe, yeah. I didn't think about that.
So now you're sitting there and you're in the area. And now, how'd you deal with the humidity when it first happened? Did that just throw you off? I mean, were you like, what the hell's going on?
No, I just felt like dirty all the time. I remember I'd come home after, well, I liked to walk the streets too because New York was so new. I would walk all over the city.
Yeah.
I just remember coming home and like putting a Kleenex to my forehead and you just like wipe dirt off your face. Because you go into the subway or even like all the buses going down the big streets, they just blow that black smoke right onto you.
So how'd you deal with your first snow? That must have been. How'd you deal with cold?
The snow.
I know it's snow, but you know what? Okay, see, here's the difference when you're a California girl and you move back east. Back east, you love the first fall of snow, but then you go after, like, you can't get somewhere for like 3 days. You're like, screw this snow. I hate this crap. You step in some slush. You're all pissed off.
The funny thing is, everyone says, like, you know, oh, how would it be when it snowed? But actually, after you live back east for a few. Well, also, I always lived in the city. They would clean up. But after you lived there a few years, you realize if it's snowing, that means it's warm, actually, because it's in the 30s.
Yes.
The brutal time was when it got pat into freezing, like 10 degrees. And in New York, all the wind goes through those buildings. So you're like, there were times I just had to stop on the street. Like, the wind is so bad and cold that you can't walk.
Yeah.
Like, you just stop and freeze. Like,
and your face, just your ears.
Oh, my
God,
it's
or just
so cold.
Your cheeks get frozen. When I was in college, we used to walk around this lake to the classes because there was apartments and you get the wind off the lake and you even had your ears would be cold. And what we'd do, because we were jerks, we'd do it to each other. When someone walked in, when freezing off the lake, we'd flick him in the ear and it would feel like your ear just shattered. People understand it's so cold.
Really?
How did you deal with that? Because you were used to warmth. I just wore a lot of layers.
Okay. No, I didn't freak out too bad. I think I just, you know, you buy the big huge coat and start wearing a couple pairs of socks and boots and all that stuff.
So you get used to New York. Now, where was the first place you did? After you did take the Colin Quinn class. Now, during that time, I know you're doing acts in front of other people, your class in front of Colin.
Yeah.
Now, at any time during that, were they saying, okay, we're going to take you to a club, or was that for your graduation?
At the end of 6 weeks, we did Stand Up New York, and that was like one of the best experiences of my life. I was officially like completely hooked after that.
What happened now? Did you know anyone in the audience?
I invited, like, my roommate. I think I knew, like, 5 people.
Because I think it's always harder if you go up and there's people in the audience. And it's like, because it's, especially when you're early, it's like that pressure. Like, now, you're probably like me. You don't give a crap. And if the people go, oh, you weren't that funny, I'm like, yeah, screw you. You know, I've done a lot of shows, but, you know. But so you went, were you nervous?
Oh, my God, all day. I was like, I don't want to be disgusting, but I was almost in the bathroom all day.
That's how bad it was?
I was so nervous.
Now, were you practicing in front of the mirror?
No. What I did do was write out, like, a monologue. I would write out my act. Okay. I did that for like my first year, and then a comic told me, throw that away, do not do that, because that means if you have it written out like a monologue, you stick to that and there's no free thinking on stage. But that's how I did it. But the first time was just so great because it was a full house at Stand Up New York. And the first thing I said was just like, this is my very first time doing stand-up. So it's like you automatically win them.
Right, exactly. Yeah, unless it's like Staten Island. Get off the stage.
And I had a good set.
Now, how long did you do?
Oh, probably 6 minutes,
okay.
I think.
So you do that 6 minutes, so now you have the bug. Now, the funny thing is it's like, you know, New York is a lot different than Philadelphia. Philadelphia had an open mic, and there's, you know, everyone on there's like 20 or 25 acts. And there's a few open mics. New York, though, must have been hard because you're new. And what year was this?
2004.
Okay, so there's more female comics. Back when I started, I mean, I started out in 90 or 89 or whatever. There was only a few females, which was weird because then they would get stage time easier because it was something different. Now, for you, I mean, you're young. You just did your 6 minutes. So what's your next step? Do you? I mean, because New York, the clubs are very competitive. I mean, you have to wait in line for the open mic and pick out a hat and all this crap.
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I did a few shows in New York, and that was also I moved back to L.A. the following year. So most of my stand-up experience is in L.A.
So where were you working in New York? Is that where you were getting? Did you get on stage a lot?
No, I didn't.
So why did you go in after? You just didn't want to, or?
I think it was just like ignorance. Like I just didn't. I would just do shows like when someone asked me.
Okay.
And so, then I was already planning to move back here just for like personal reasons. Okay. And then when I got here, I had comics who were like, "Okay, if you want to be a comedian, you go out every night. You do open mics. You do all this." And that's when I started going like every single night.
Okay. So now where were some of the places you started going out here when you first started out?
Oh, I used to go a lot of open mic, like the really, really good ones, like Bliss Cafe. Okay. On.
I walked by. You know what's funny? I walked by there one time, and I looked in because I was doing the M Bar.
There's AA meetings
and it's right
there too.
Right in the corner from the M Bar. That's great. Actually, this is so funny.
M Bar. Yeah.
Yeah. I was doing a gig and I parked there and I was like, I'd seen the Bliss Cafe on Facebook, and I'm like, yeah. And I look and I'm like, they do comedy here.
Yeah.
I was like, how the hell do they do comedy here? Which is weird because the AA meetings when I did it's called the Sarcasm Comedy Club in Cherry Hill, and it's in the Hyatt, and Hyatt was packed because it was an AA convention. And what's funny is it was me, and the headliner was Don Fredrickson, who's on that metal show. So he's got the heart. So there's the audience was so weird because you got these hardcore drinkers, rock and roll, and these total teetotalers. It was just weird. I mean, I cannot imagine. I mean, have you ever performed in front of an AA crowd?
Yeah, those are great crowds.
Okay.
I've done a couple of those shows. They're really good, like the Sober House shows.
Right.
Or whatever.
Okay.
Usually they're really good laughers because they'll laugh at anything. You can go dark. Like sometimes regular audiences get freaked out if you go like.
Don't you hate
dark.
That? Yeah. When they're like, Like I have someone groan and I just looked at her and I told her, shut up. I'm like, don't
it's
groan.
It's confusing to me because I'm like, it's fine if you don't think it's a funny joke, but I hate when people look at me like what I'm saying is they don't understand it all.
Right,
it's like,
right.
Come on. You have some of these dark thoughts too.
So yeah, of course. Well, everyone does. They're saying it. It makes them uncomfortable. So now you're hitting these open mics, Bliss. And what are some other crowds? Because I was
Comedy Store. I went to every week.
Did you get on, or did you have to wait in line, or how's that work?
Comedy Store is pretty easy. You sign up. They don't always pick you, but I started to get to know the people that work there, and I would get on.
So you got to wait. Like you have to get there early to sign up in line. See, that's why I don't really go to the Comedy Store. I would never get in line to do an open mic because I'm like I'm not that I'm above that, but I am. I mean, I that's awful to say. I'm not going to wait. Oh yeah, because it's so funny. It's like. It's just weird. So
I did it my first couple of years. I did bringer shows my
well, you were
first
new.
Year.
I mean, if you were starting out, you were new. It's understandable. If people didn't know, bringer shows is where the people have you bring guests as you can't do stage time. And as Mark, do you know Mark Eddy?
No, not personally.
But Mark was on the show and he goes, yeah, I went into this club and they said, okay, bring guests. And he's been headlining for years. He goes, I have a big following. He goes, I'll pack the freaking house. And he goes, what are you going to pay me? Oh, no, we keep the money.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Like, I'm not going to do it. What are you, crazy?
I got a great show. Oh, God, my first show out here. Someone from New York recommended me to a guy that books, I won't say his name, who books a bringer show out here. So my first show, I didn't know. So I show up because I'm booked and he goes, you don't have anyone here. You don't have any audience. And I was like, no. And he goes, okay, you got to pay me $20 to
what?
Get on. And I didn't know, so I just gave him $20.
You know what? It's
isn't that horrible?
You know what disgusts me? It's like, first of all, these people don't give a crap about comedy.
That's the most disappointing.
Because the thing is, it's like, okay, if you're booking, like that's the one thing. When I did, you did Cooper's Angels, right?
Yes.
And I always made sure I had a good lineup. And I knew a lot of people weren't going to bring. And I was like, you know what? I don't care because I'm not going to put. And someone's like, well, you know, you can put a person who. No, because first of all, bottom line is it says Cooper's Angels. That means it's my show. Okay, I have respect for my name, and if I have my friends come and they go, this show was awful.
Yeah.
I go, but everyone I know who came to see it all went, man, those girls were great because I always put a good lineup on. And it's and the thing is, then when I did it at 11:30. You can't get people out then. But I grew up in the mentality it's the clubs. It's like saying to a waiter, okay, you have this section, but you have to bring the customers in. It doesn't happen.
Well, also, if you want people to come back, if you put on a good show, people will come back.
And like, it gets word of mouth.
Comedy Juice is the prime example of that one.
What is Comedy Juice?
I mean, I'm a comic, and I go watch that show.
No, I've heard, I always see, and there's Comedy Juice in New York,
too. It's always
a
good lineup.
But what is it?
Ben Glebe started it years ago at the Laugh Factory.
Ben
then
was
it
on
moved
the show.
To the Improv. It's every Wednesday at 10. But they always have a, it's always packed. They always have a good lineup. And so they get repeat
right.
people all the
people
time.
People will say, this is
because
great.
They trust you. Like, if you know, if you can pack a house once with bringer comics and the audience will come, but the audience is like, well, we're not coming back to
right.
this show.
Yeah, it's so you were doing bringers, and they charge you $20. I mean, it's like, I always crack up. Like, some people will say, you know, buy a drink. Well, that's fine. You know, it's an open mic, too. And even if it's a club soda or water, that's fine. There's no problem like that, because you're going to drink something anyway. And, you know, you should, in all honesty, I personally, because when I was in a restaurant, I've been in the restaurant business, I don't want to see comics coming in with a bottle of water they don't sell there. Sorry, but, you know, bottom line is they're still selling a business, and they're giving you the time
yeah.
to do the stage.
Yeah.
But they're not sitting there and saying, it's a comedy club. It's an open mic that night. And it's the bar that doesn't care, because a lot of times the booker doesn't get paid. But with the booker, it just bothers me when people have to pay money to get on stage. It's like, who are you to ask me? Because without me, there's no you. I mean, it's weird. So you paid $20 now. Did you? How was it? Did you have a good set?
Yeah, I had fun.
Were you
I mean,
pissed?
It was like my first time. No, it was just like, it was, yeah, I was just kind of hurt. But I was confused because I was like, so new.
Because they don't tell you, oh, by the way, you need these many people. Like, I know someone who didn't bring enough people. They gave him like 2 minutes. Screw you. So, okay, so you start there. Now you start, and we'll talk about that off air because I want to find out who it is. We're like that. Comics are so catty. We're like little old ladies, as my dad would say, cackling hens. You always love the comics always gossip. It's great.
That's so funny.
So, okay, so now you start. Now you're getting on the Comedy Store. Okay, now when do you feel that you're getting into your groove as an act? When do you feel like you're sitting there going, okay, you know, I'm getting good. I'm ready to. I mean, you because out here it's mostly 7 minute sets.
Yeah.
So you really don't know how to judge. Now, how long you were working at Comedy Store? What other clubs were you working?
I would get a few spots maybe at the Improv if I was lucky, like getting a guest spot for a headline, like a 5 minute. But I wasn't really working clubs. It was mostly all like bar shows, a lot of bar shows like out in Orange County too.
Now, I think
because when you go to the Comedy Store, you meet all those comics and then you find out who books other
right.
stuff.
Now, I think bar shows, I think really. They make a comic much better. And I'll be honest, it's like back east, the road shows were crap holes. And it's like you would go down on like a run of 10 nights, you know, and back then I would go and co-headline with this guy. And we'd be in like these small towns. But then you come back to feature at your local club, and the headliner might as well kiss his ass goodbye because you're so tight.
Oh, my God, you have to do those.
You're so tight, and you're doing your hometown. So like when I go back and do my – I do a completely different act when I do – where I grew up in.
Really?
Because people don't get the Jersey Shore. It's not about the show. Like, there's Beach Tigers. There's this. There's that. When I did my hometown in Cherry Hill and Marlton, everything's changed since I've been back there. So you just talk about that, and people are like, wow.
Yeah, that's cool.
But so you're sitting there, so you're doing these seven-minute sets. Now, when did you start getting longer sets? I mean, how did that – did you progress? I mean
– I would say after 4 years.
And so you were – where were you doing that? I mean, you were still doing the bar shows.
I got lucky when I was early on, like 2 or 3. And I don't know if part of it's being a girl that, you know, because you say, like, there's not as many. So if you're funny, you stand out. But
now
I
there's a ton.
I didn't start till I was, like, 30.
Okay, so that's – you're older.
So
you're smarter.
I'm older, but also I had, like, so many years of performing, even though it wasn't stand-up.
Right.
So I think I was a decent performer from the start.
Okay.
It was just a matter of honing that whole craft of, like, you know, a comic telling jokes. I never could do crowd work at that time.
Okay.
Either.
Now, when did you start doing the longer sets, and were you comfortable? Because you were coming back. You were coming from doing 7 minute sets, and everyone goes, you can do. I mean, honestly, you can do 3 different 7 minute sets, but the 5 minutes may be new. But it's a lot different than doing a 30 minute set.
Yeah, that's the thing. When I was first going to start featuring, people were like, "Oh, you can practice around LA. Just do 3 different 7 minute." But it's not.
Because you don't get that flow, and you speed it up. When
my first couple of feature sets, I was so used to 7 minute, and I talk really fast. I like
right.
I don't like dead time, so I would the first 10 minutes I'd be talking really fast and tell all my jokes, and then I had all this time left. I was like,
right.
Oh my God, I went way too fat.
That's funny.
And I'm telling like my best jokes at the top, and then just closing on something weird like. So who's single? Okay,
right.
Well, have a good night.
it's weird because it's hard. It is true.
You have to learn how to pace yourself in the long sets.
And
you can't practice it by doing 3 different
right,
sets.
And it's hard because you also do when you're doing, you know, a shorter set, you try to compress stuff more in. But like me, I mean, I hate smaller stages because I walk a lot on the stage and I get into it. And I do one liners, but then I also do my things and I do my stupid impressions, which I have a bunch of new
stuff.
Ones.
I love your stuff. It's funny.
Thank you. But I get into it. You know, when you do a longer set, it's different. There's like this freedom because you don't care. You're like, and also in the back of your mind, you're going, okay, I haven't been doing long sets. I hope I can cover this time. So you start now. Where were some of the places you started featuring at?
A couple of people would take me like up north maybe. You know, Adam Richmond is a guy who was nice to me. Let me feature for him a few times. I didn't start out featuring in clubs.
Okay.
Locally. It was more like bar shows, but I mean like big bar shows where it wasn't a rowdy.
Right. Okay.
Just stuff that was self. I don't know how to explain, I guess.
That's all right.
Don't sorry.
Worry. They don't know. It's okay. Don't worry. People, she play with Chuck E. Cheese in that outfit, and she tell jokes. No,
a lot of stuff in Orange. I would drive to Orange County a lot because I could get 20-minute spots.
Okay,
out there.
And they have bigger venues down there because out here there's some small-ass places, and there are bars. It's like just people talking at
but
the bar.
But it's bars where people would come to the show
right.
for comedy.
Right. Okay, that makes sense because here it's
so
like people...
I would drive out there a lot. But yeah, there was a couple bars I did locally here in LA though where it just like I think everyone needs that experience of like super rowdy bars where you are yelling over them, which is miserable. But at the time, you have to learn how to get those people's attention because you can shut them up.
Right. Oh, yeah, you can. I mean, it's like, and that's, you can always tell a, it's so many things you can tell, and you've been in the business for a while. There's so many things you can tell. It's like, for me, if someone doesn't get a joke sometimes, I'll do the old line, but I'll say it differently. I'm like, yeah, I don't give a crap. And then I would sit there and I go, well, I'm going to do this every time I don't get a joke. And I go, with my thing, and I sit there, and then because I'm not like someone who goes, oh, you didn't think that's funny. They know, also they think that's part of my act. So then when I tell a joke, I do that again, they laugh. But a new comic, it's like when a crowd hates you, you don't say, oh, you guys hate me. You don't say that unless it's part of your act where like, oh, yeah, I can tell you hate me, and then you'll bring something off the cuff, why they hate you. And it's so, I mean,
some
doesn't irk you?
Comics say the worst lines. It still happens now when people go up for only like a 6 or 7 minute set, and then they'll be up there going, so, what should we talk about? And it's like, you didn't bring the jokes?
Right, right.
That you-
I mean, for me, honestly, because I have so much
I
material.
Hate that.
And I don't work on it. Like tonight, I'm at Michael's tonight. I have no idea what
it's
I'm going to do. I know, I've been there a bunch of times. I don't know what I'm going to do. I forget. I've had head injuries, all right? I've had many head injuries. I remember 200 years ago. I don't remember last week. And when I go on stage, I don't have any. I know my beginning. I don't have an ending.
Yeah, but you're professional enough to like wing it or make up stuff.
But
I know.
But then stuff comes in my head, or I'll put notes down occasionally because it's not a big set. A big set, I would never put notes down.
Improvising on stage is my favorite thing to do.
No, that comes because, but from the acting and from, I mean, when you think about it, with actors, you forget your lines sometimes. So, but if you forget your lines, you can sit there and bring it to a complete screeching halt. Or you can go with it, and if you know the person you're working with, it's already, they know. They're like, this person screwed up their lines.
Like, it's a bored of my jokes, too.
but you do a lot of one-liners types.
I have short jokes. Yeah, I'm not a storyteller. I only, in the last 6 months, I feel like I've really gotten comfortable improvising on stage. I used to never stray.
Well, you
and it's so much more fun.
Isn't it? It's like, I never do it in the beginning, and it's like, and that's also what I tell people. It's funny. It's, and I was talking about this with, John Manfrolatti, he was on last week, and he started out in Florida, where he ended up being the house MC, and I'm still of the old, not old school belief, but my belief is you need a good MC to make the show well, a good host, and the thing is that's when I started out. They put new acts, but you still have to do 15 to 20, so you learned how to do the stage, and you learned if you went on. And it was even though there's only three acts, or like now when I did Cooper's Angels, if one of the acts sucks, they don't like him, you just can't bring the other act on. You can't throw him to the wolves. I hate when comics go, we're going to keep the show running along. No. It's like I've hosted for someone at Flappers, and he's like, well, here's – I'm like, you know what? You're an open micer who books a room. I said, do you want your room to go good or I mean, well? Or, and he's like, well, don't do much time. I said, that person just sucked ass.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I'm gonna bring this next person up to complete silence. You're not thinking about, you can go 5 minutes over on the act. I'm just doing, I don't want to do the time. But it's weird. I mean,
yeah, people in LA seem to think that being a host, like, it's an insult if someone asks you to host their show. And it's the harder job.
Right. Well,
I love hosting.
Well, in Canada, they pay the host more, a lot more than the MC. The host more than the feature.
Really?
I know, but
it's a hard job.
Yeah.
And if it really makes a difference if you're good at it.
And that's the thing, is a good host, at least back east, could always work. You know, so now you sort of do a character. Would you consider sort of a character on stage?
When I first started, I was more of a character, not as much anymore. But that was because I didn't necessarily try and make a character, but I was so nervous that I turned it into, like, I used it for comedy.
Well, it was sort of shy.
And I played, like, the nervous part, but I really was nervous. Like, okay. I just parlayed it into my jokes.
Now,
and then as I got more comfortable on stage, I couldn't. Then it became that I had to act nervous, and then it just got awkward. Like, I was really sucking for, like, 6 months.
I can imagine.
I didn't know what to do. Because the nervous character worked so well that when I got more comfortable on stage, and I didn't want to fake it.
Right, and you didn't want to scrap that act because you knew it was proven laughs.
Yeah, even my manager, like, at the time was like, you're not good anymore.
Really? So you, but you were you still doing the same material, or you just... you? Or,
yeah, but it just wasn't working because... I didn't want to go up there and be fake.
Right.
And I just wasn't nervous anymore. So now I found it. Now I'm good. I found my voice. And I don't play... Now I'm just play what my awkward side is, but not like the nervous.
But you're not awkward in real life.
Not if I'm comfortable, but I am if I were to be around...
Okay.
In like social situations, I'm extremely awkward.
And so now how did that... But when you're on stage, do you feel awkward or do you feel comfortable?
No, well, I tap into my awkward side, but I heighten it with adrenaline, and I love it.
Okay, so
no, I do feel awkward a little bit. Yeah.
Now you take, but I mean, that's normal. I mean, then that's, you get energy. I mean, honestly, me, I don't give a crap now. I'm like, I don't care because that's not my main focus. But I used to get so like nervous.
Yeah, I still get nervous.
But now, that's good though. I mean, I still get a little nervous before. Once I get on, I'm not. Before I go, I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, I forgot that. I'm like, what am I going to do? Yeah. And it's, so now you used to keep the mic in the stand a lot. Now was in the very beginning of your act. But I've only worked with you where you do like shorter sets.
I never used to take it out.
Now, what was, is that scary the first time you did it?
Well, the reason I didn't take it out is because I wasn't comfortable. It took me so many years to get comfortable with the mic. So when I would take it out, it would like, if I was really nervous, I felt like it would shake.
Okay.
Or I would just feel like I was standing weird. Like, I was like, I don't know. Someone told me that I looked really uncomfortable. So I just started leaving it in. And then once I left it in, all the nervous energy I had came through. I felt like it came through my jokes and stuff rather than
through
the awkwardness of holding the mic.
Okay.
So I felt like it made me better because my whole body just used that energy for the jokes rather than constantly feeling awkward of how I was standing or how I was holding the mic.
Okay. So now. You still start off with the mic stand. But how long into your set until you take it out?
Now actually just in the last couple of weeks I started taking the mic out.
From the get go?
In the beginning.
Now how do you still think?
Isn't that weird? It took me 7 years to be comfortable.
But that's funny. I mean, I would sit there in the beginning. I would keep the mic in a stand, and then now I'm like, as I said, I mean, I've never like felt I've had my voice on stage, and I've always felt comfortable. I mean, I just because my thoughts are all over the place, and I write stupid one-liners, but I don't want to do them on stage because I got to remember them all. You know, and I mean, they're not stupid; they're funny, but to me, they're dumb. That's why my production company is called Creative Stupidity Productions.
I love that. That's great. Thing.
But for you, so now do you walk around the stage now, or you just stand there? Or, I mean, what?
Cause, I'm starting to walk a little bit.
So when you took it out in the beginning, you just stood there.
Mm-hmm. I always just stood, yeah.
Okay. Now, but did you feel, I mean, I don't know. It's always like when the mic's in the stand, I always feel like it's a little confined, you're confined.
I don't know. It just depends, I think. Like, there's some really good comics who don't take it out. There's not that many. Like, John Caparulo is one, I think, who just stands behind the mic.
Okay.
There's a couple. But the reason I thought I should start taking it out and moving around is when I started doing more feature spot, like doing half hours.
Yeah, just people.
And I thought this gets boring just standing here.
Now were you in Last Comic Standing?
I was.
Okay, now what year was that? What year of their season? What season, you know?
It was 2007, I believe, 2008 when Eliza won.
Okay, so what was the whole process like?
They gave me really good coverage.
Did you audition at a club or did you wait in line?
At the Hollywood Improv.
Okay.
I got a spot to audition. I didn't have to wait in line.
Okay. And so
It was a really good experience, actually, that first year. Second year I did it was not a good experience.
Did they contact you the first year? Were you excited because they said you could be in Last Comic Standing?
First year my agent got me, my manager got me an audition and I went in. And I was so excited. I almost started crying.
Okay.
Because they passed me to go to the night show.
Okay.
Because at the time, I didn't know how it worked, and I just saw hundreds of people that were auditioning. Now, after I did it the second year, I'm, like, kind of suspect of, like, what is their plan?
Well, it's, you know what's weird is there's new comics, and there's comics that have been around forever, and it's like the year Rich Voss didn't win. Rich is an amazing comic. Rich has been doing comedy for years. Rich is so good that even after he didn't win, they brought him back to be a judge. And which is weird. Todd Glass didn't win. I mean, these are national headliners. And that's what's weird about it. It's like they must be looking for something different at times because, I'm sorry, the last comic, Todd Glass is one of the best comics in the country.
I believe they decide before the season what angle they're going to go at. Because like my season, that first time, I think they knew that they wanted a girl to win.
Okay.
Because no girl had won yet. Everyone they chose was young and really good looking for the most part. When it had like Jeff Dye, Eliza.
I don't know who Jeff Dye is, but.
They're young. He's good. He's on MTV now. But they go for like a certain. And then the last season, the last one they did, was all. They completely switched it and they got like. Almost everyone was kind of a veteran comic. Okay. Everyone had been in like 15 years. They were a little bit older. It was much better.
Who won that year? Was that Alonzo?
Felipe.
Felipe was on the show. Felipe's
and that's the
show.
That's the last season they did.
Oh, yeah. It's weird. I wonder why it stopped because I thought it got good ratings. I don't know.
That last season should have gotten really good ratings because that was really good.
It's just weird. It's weird how TV is. They'll just stop stuff.
For some reason, comedy just has trouble parlaying into the general public because all these other shows, reality shows, you know, are become so big.
I don't know if that one, Honey Boo Boo or something.
No, but I mean like,
no.
I'm talking about, I mean like,
have you seen that?
Where people are performing, the shows where people are performing. Oh my God, I just recently saw Honey Boo Boo.
Is it good?
Holy.
Is it a guilty pleasure?
I can't say it's good. It's just, when you first see it, you're like, oh my God, who are these people?
Now, did you enjoy it? Will you watch it again?
I did.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to make a confession right now. You know what show I watched and I liked?
What?
Okay, and I'm going to say this in front of all my listeners. Big Ange.
Who's Big Ange?
It's a mob wife who looks, she looks like a mixture of Patrick Ewing and like Harvey Fierstein. And she's a woman, but she talks like this. And she's a real Staten Island, Big Ange. She's got these big ass boobs. I like this and then this. Oh my God, I'm Big Ange. And it is so bad that I sit there and go, oh my God, I watch it. I'm like, is it on demand? Can I find it on demand?
It's so interesting because people make fun of like, oh my God, our culture is so horrible. Like we watch all these reality shows, but they spend so much time on like regular sitcoms or movies or anything. For some reason, it just could never be quite as interesting as these people that are real.
Right, it's true. It's true.
You're like, these people are real.
Oh, it's totally true. It's like you watch it, you sit there and you go, wow. And then that's when you call your parents to go, thank you, Mom and Dad, for giving me a good upbringing. It's like, it's true. And people watch this and you're like, wait a second. Then you see a great show. Like years ago, there was a show called Action, which was one of the best shows with Jay Moore. It was one of the best TV shows. And it got canceled because no one watched it. But it was based in LA, but it was great. You know, we have like 3 minutes left.
Oh.
Give all your information so they can check you out and come see you and give the whole lowdown.
All right. Check me out. Jen Murphy Comedy. That has all my dates. Or I'm on Facebook, Twitter.
Now,
I'll be coming to Michigan. If anyone's in Michigan at the end of September, I'll be playing at the Comedy Castle.
Mark Ridley?
Mark Ridley's Castle, yes.
Okay.
I'll be in Seattle the following month at the end of October. But I'm mostly around L.A., Orange County, Northern California.
And you're going to be at Lovitz, your headlining show,
I will
show,
be headlining
right?
The John Lovitz Comedy Club. I will get you on the guest list if you contact me. It's September 20th.
Contact her. That's a Thursday.
8 p.m. Thursday.
Come out, people. And Lovitz is a great club. It's right there on it's up there in
Universal.
The Universal City. And a lot of times they'll give you deals on parking. You can get free.
$3 valet.
$3 valet. And actually that's cheaper than the actual regular parking.
It costs $20 to park there.
Isn't that weird? It's like when I would, at least when you do shows, you get on the guest list. One time I was doing a show up at Lovitz and they're like, you're not on the list. That's what you call the club. I said, I'm not paying to park.
No.
It's like, I'm not, you know, and so it's
ridiculous.
Just, it's weird. But so, yeah, and so it's jenmurphy.com.
Yes.
No.
jenmurphycomedy.com.
Okay, so check her out, please, and go see her show. People, here's my lowdown. Email me at Cooper at Indie100. I always say INDIE100.com, but they're listening, so they know it's IND. Also, if you go to TuneIn Radio, you can listen to, it's if you go to the old station, the Y, it's a local radio, type in the Y, 92.5. You can listen to shows there. Check me out at www.coopertalk.net. You got to type the www right now, else it goes to my GoDaddy landing page, which makes no sense. My new blog, I just started yesterday. I do about 10 jokes a day, five each post. That's the cooperthought.blogspot.com. And also, what else? Oh, the Big Daddy Graham. Listen, look, follow me on Twitter, at Cooper Talk, because every Thursday night, I'm sometimes on at 11 at night, my time, two hours your time. And I just go on and we talk about L.A. and how it's a crazy city. So please keep doing that. And also listen Friday, every Friday at 3 on the same station. I co-host Living in the Law with myself, comic Sheldon Anderson, and entertainment mogul lawyer John Fagerholm. So listen to that. I want to thank you, Jen, for coming on.
Oh, thank you. So fun.
And so now you can, as I said, you're always around and about. So people, if you're in L.A., she's got, you know, it says where the shows are, and they're all over. So it's like, that's just not in Hollywood. She's in Orange County. She's in Long Beach. She's all over. So please go see her. Hit her up at Jen Murphy Comedy, just one end, jenmurphycomedy.com, and at Twitter. And I want to thank you guys for listening. As you guys are listening on Friday, I'll be out with my girlfriend because I'm picking her up Friday morning. So that will be good. So then, yeah. So anyway, people, thank you again. Remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only a hips of my guest. And follow me at Cooper Talk on Twitter. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
Sheldon Anderson, he's such a...